Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. I'm Ann Nicholson. If you haven't seen Metal Point on paper, you need to visit Hearn Fine Art on Wright Avenue. There's an exhibit up not to be missed. Marjorie Williams Smith will entrance you with what she has created. For one, she brings dead roses to life. She joined me a few days ago to record how she came to this field of art, from her childhood passion with pencils and crayons to a skill in a field of art that seems magical.
And so I made up my mind after doing some reading. I wanted to go to Pratt. And I told my parents about it, and they said, well, no, we can't afford that. And the schools in New York are just a little too expensive. So maybe you should look at Howard University and maybe even Maryland University. And I decided, well, I'll go to Howard. I didn't want to have to travel to Maryland. It wasn't that far, but I just didn't want to have to go out of town to go to school every day. So I wound up at Howard, which was actually a very good choice.
And were there particular aspects of going to a school like that that began to show you that you yourself had something to give that would enhance what you were also getting,
yes,
but you were growing into something that, looking further ahead, almost dreaming what might happen?
Yeah.
This was a fairly important stage for you to get into.
Yes. Well, once I got to Howard, and I guess I assumed because it was in my hometown that maybe they would not have as good of an offering as I thought New York City had. But once I got there and got to working with the professors, I realized that they had a lot to offer, and I really needed to be there. My first instructor in drawing was Jeff Donaldson, who actually was from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And he was the chairman of the art department at the time. He was very tall, had a very commanding, deep voice, very good disciplinarian in terms of teaching us how to develop a good work ethic. That when he gave an assignment, here's how you go about finishing that assignment. Here's what you need to do on your own time. Here's what I expect from you in class. And he really set that discipline level. And I really respected his work. We got to see what he was working on from time to time. And I just really had not seen that sort of commitment from a teacher in terms of their own work and being an artist and being able to teach and be an artist.
So this was stepping into a different world in many ways.
Yes, yes. And he wasn't the only instructor. I had Lois Jones, who was actually a famous painter who had studied in France for a number of years. Ed Love was my sculpture instructor. And also teaching there was Wadsworth Jarrell and James Phillips, who later I found out were involved in the group Afro-Cobra. And that was a widely recognized group of artists originating in Chicago, this organization, and founded by Jeff Donaldson, who really wanted to support the African-American community and give voice to some of the concerns that the community had. So we saw their work. We heard about their commitment to art and what role the arts could play in the culture and in society. And that was just eye-opening, mm-hmm, that we could have an impact on people outside of the arts. So I really enjoyed that and really felt, okay, I'm going to have an art career.
So at this point, you are well into an adult idea, mm-hmm, and focus.
Yes.
And were meeting people that you almost knew because they were from the same part of the country.
Yes.
And did this find its way that you hadn't expected?
I think so, because I guess I never expected that I'd find this value in my hometown. I took a lot for granted growing up there, even though we had the National Gallery, we had all the Smithsonian's, and you know, after a while I was like, oh yeah, National Gallery. I've been there, I've seen that, I don't really need to go back right now. But I had to reevaluate that once I got into college and realized there was something happening all the time. Mm-hmm. And to really keep up with the current trends, what, you know, see what other artists are doing. And so that was real important. And also to value the fact that there was a very strong African-American art community that was well connected. They needed that network to support one another. And I think the school program really encouraged us to network into that, tap into that.
Now, where this was where you are at home. Mm-hmm. So home base was exactly where?
Washington, D.C.
So you had everything at your fingertips.
Yes.
You just had to find out where they were.
Uh-huh.
And which of the many choices you could have made,
mm-hmm.
you had to look at the people around you, the friends you had begun to make,
mm-hmm.
and the teachers, and the galleries and places that showed people mm-hmm. like yourself the sort of things that you hadn't realized existed.
Yes.
Until suddenly it made itself clear to you as you matured that it was a form of what you could aspire to.
Yes. Like Professor Lois Jones talked to us about her years in Paris and working and getting to see the work of a lot of the Parisian artists and how important it was for her to have that time to work on her paintings, to find her voice, and encouraged us to do the same. Toward my junior and senior year, I got involved with the newsletter that was within the art department that was circulated for our students and just to share what we were doing, some of the things going on with programming and so forth. So I think by my last year, I was the editor of this newsletter and just really doing lots of things within the department and really working hard on my work. I spent a lot of time in the studios working.
How could you get to a point where the world was your oyster? You went where you felt you had to go,
right?
Because there were things beckoning you.
Yes.
What was that for you?
Well, when I went to high school in Washington, and I made friends with a lot of other students who were also interested in art. And it seems like that little group of friends, we all went to Howard. So that in the art department, it was like I was still in high school because I had the same group of friends. And then we add in people who were from out of town, out of state. Many of the students that I knew from high school were going to go into art education. And I thought, well, I didn't want to go into art education. I was hoping to go into design. And then I found printmaking, and it kind of partnered with the design. But I knew that if I wanted to pursue printmaking more and more, I'd have to pursue a second degree after the bachelor's level. And not many of my friends were thinking beyond that bachelor's degree program. So I talked to my professor, Professor Donaldson, and talked to him about, I think I would like to teach at the college level, but in printmaking. What would I need to do? And he said, well, you need a Master of Fine Arts because that's the terminal degree for a studio artist. I talked to my printmaking instructor, Winston Kennedy. He had a lot of ideas. He said, well, you might want to look at trying to work with Robert Blackburn, who works in New York City. He has the printmaking workshop that he's founded there where artists can go and print their prints, and it's world renowned. I think he's teaching at Columbia University. Oh, man, that sounds great. And the Maryland Institute College of Art was in Baltimore. That wasn't too far away from home. And so I thought, okay, I'll apply to the Maryland Institute, and then I'll apply to Columbia and see if I can get into their graduate programs. But I really wanted to go to Columbia. And so I talked to Professor Donaldson, and he said, oh, okay. I asked him if he would write letters of recommendation for me. And he said, sure. And he said, now, are you applying to Pratt? And I said, no. He said, why not? I said, well, I want to go to Columbia because Robert Blackburn is there. He said, well, you need to apply to Pratt too. I didn't really want to spend the time doing this application when I really had my heart set on this other place. He said, well, I think you need to do it. You need to go ahead and do that. And if you don't, I will fail you in my class.
Wow. It hit hard.
It hit hard. And I thought he was joking, but he made me realize he was not joking. So I went ahead and did that application. He sent in the letter of reference. And as it turned out, that's where I got accepted. I did not get accepted to Columbia. So I thought, okay, well, I'll go to Pratt. And, you know, it's funny how life takes you on these varying twists and turns. You think you have a path figured out, you're going to do that. And, you know, life has other plans. And so it was actually really great that I went to Pratt because I was in New York. I got to see lots of art, lots of contemporary things going on. I had the opportunity to work with great drawing instructors. So my drawing, I really got to focus more on my drawing than ever. And I got to do the printmaking, which was great. So I thought, okay, now I'm on my way towards getting that job in printmaking. And so when I finished school, I tried to apply to get jobs in printmaking and could not because I didn't have any experience as a teacher in printmaking. But I did have experience working as a commercial artist. So I went and got jobs there as a commercial artist.
Doing what?
Doing graphic design, doing layout. This was well before computer. Mm-hmm. So if we were doing a page for a magazine, we actually, someone would type it up and we'd paste that type down on a page and they would photograph that and put that on a plate for printing for the magazine. So somebody actually had to hand manipulate the materials to create that page layout. And that's what I did. But it was not like doing my own art.
I was going to say, this is very effective work to earn money and go on and learn a skill.
Yes.
But to get to what I think is underneath the surface of you was creating.
Yes.
And creating art of some kind that hasn't yet come your way.
Right.
But that you know is there for you. So.
Yeah, I would think about it at the end of the day. I'd go home and I had my space and got a little apartment and I would try to do my own work. But I also took on freelance work. I brought in some more money. But in the back of my mind, I thought, I still want to try to get in that printmaking workshop I heard about with Robert Blackburn. And one day I just thought, I think I'll call them and find out if they have a class so that I can just get back into my lithography. And it turned out they did. They had a person teaching classes, and I called and said, do you have a class? And they said, yes, the teacher's here right now, so hold on. And this gentleman got on the phone, and we talked about possibly taking this class. And he said, bring in your portfolio, and I'll look at it and see if you can take the class. And as it turned out, the person I talked to was A.J. Smith, who is my husband. So I met him there. And I did get to do more lithography, and I did get to do my own prints, which made the work day go faster because I knew I was going to go to the workshop at the end of the day and work on my own things.
And what about the young man who was looking at you and you looking at him?
We figured we kind of hit it off really well. Mm-hmm. And I would say about a year or so later, we got married. So then, and then we continued to live in New York City. So he was doing his prints, and I would do prints occasionally, and I was doing my own artwork, but still working as a graphic designer all day. When we had tight deadlines, might mean we had to work overtime, and I still kept my freelance job. So that would mean I was going from 8 in the morning, sometimes till 10 or 11 at night. And if I was on a real tight deadline with the freelance work, I might stay up late, work till 2. That was really taxing. So I didn't get to do a whole lot of my own work. And it wasn't until we moved to Arkansas that things changed. My husband got invited to come to Little Rock to interview for a position at the Art Center as artist in residence. And so he told me about, I've got this opportunity, and what do you think about me going to Little Rock, Arkansas? And I thought, no way. He said, would you like to move there? And I thought, no, I don't really want to move there. I thought, leave New York and move there? And I'm not sure if I want to move there. I only thought about 1957 and the school situation, and that's the only thing I could think of. So he went to the interview anyway, and he had a very good experience, and he came home and he said, oh, I think this would be great if we moved there. And we were also about to start our family, I was expecting. So he said, you could take some time off and have the baby, and then maybe we can come back.
Now, was the job your husband got, was it at the Art Center?
Yes, it was at the
Art Center. So that was fairly high up the ladder in a way.
Yes, he was.
For the respect that the Art Center has in the whole state.
Yes.
And for what you were wanting to do, it wasn't part of that package.
It wasn't.
So what did you do?
I didn't realize how much energy it would take to have a baby and spending time with a newborn and not sleeping at night. So I had to figure out a new kind of schedule and kind of work things in. But I started slowly back into drawing and doing my own drawings. And I happened to have a flower on my desk that I had gotten for my first Mother's Day. And I thought, I don't think I'll just draw this. Baby's asleep. I've got a few minutes. I think I'll just do this little study, which I did. And it was fun. And then I did another one. So I just started this little series of flowers. That 1 year turned into a second year. And we're still here. My husband had gotten a job offer at the university. So now he was going to teach drawing and printmaking. And we thought, this is a good, steady job, and, you know, we're starting a family, so this is a great opportunity. So we decided to stay. I would frequently go to the art center and see what was on display, and that was a way of just connecting with the current scene of art. And one day I went in, this was in 1985, I went in and saw this exhibition called The Fine Line, Drawing with Silver in America. And it was all silver point drawing. Now, I had heard about silver point drawing in our history class because artists in the Renaissance, like Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, all used silver point to draw. But I'd never seen anything like this. So there were two galleries full of drawings with silver point, and I was just mesmerized.
I would think, because I think we all were. I saw this same exhibit.
Okay.
And you couldn't describe
exactly
what you felt when you saw these amazing creations.
Oh, yes.
And the young man from Russia, I think he was, came with it, with Townsend Wolf. And the quality of his own excitement at doing this was just there to be held.
Yes.
And you listened and you watched. And you wanted to be able to do something similar.
Exactly. There were so many artists in this particular show, and the work just had an ethereal quality about it that I just couldn't imagine how you draw like that. But I thought about the series of drawings I had made with roses in pencil, and I thought, I think this would be a great tool for my roses. The delicate line, the thinness of the line, there was just no way you could get that with that pencil. And the coloration, because what I was looking at was silver that had tarnished or had started to tarnish. So it wasn't gray. It was like this warm tone. And then some artists were mixing a variety of metals. It wasn't just silver point, but it was also copper point and gold point. And I thought, what is that? How do you even, I mean, what are the tools? Where do you get this? So I went back many days to look at the show and read the labels to see what all was going on. And they had a catalog, which I bought.
Did you get a chance to talk to Mr. Kulbach?
Yes. Well, years later, after that Fine Line show, he had that solo show at the Art Center. And he did do a lecture, and I did get to talk with him. And I asked him questions about where did he get his materials. So I started looking through a printmaking catalog from Daniel Smith, a supplier that has lots of printmaking tools, but they also carried what was a traditional gesso mix. And in it was rabbit skin glue, titanium white, which was the pigment, and then crushed marble, which allowed it to have a certain, once applied to the surface, a texture. Painters would use rabbit skin glue to coat their canvas as a way of protecting the canvas from the effects of paint. But these materials all in one mix made it easy for an artist to get a traditional ground where you would have the color white. You'd also have that crushed marble, which would give you a somewhat grainy surface. All you had to do was add water, and it was very easy. I was able to use that gesso mix and get a really nice value difference with the metal. Now, you can also use acrylic gesso, which is a plastic base gesso.
And where did that come from?
Back during the time of the Renaissance, artists, particularly using this metal, found that you could not leave a mark on the surface that they were using. They were using vellum or parchment, and that material was very soft, and the metal was very hard, and you would not be able to leave a mark. But if you had some sort of solution on that paper, then you could leave a mark on it. So what they would do is gather up chicken bones and grind them up and get that calcium that was in the bone and mix that with that rabbit skin glue so it would help stick it together, and then add a pigment to it. And then add the water, or really saliva is what they started with, and mix that up and apply that to the surface. Once that dried, you had a slightly abrasive surface that would definitely leave a mark with that metal. And that's where that ground came mm-hmm. from. Now, that was very labor intensive to make that.
Where did you have access to this type of material?
I don't think we had the internet then. So I sent away the order form and got this gesso, and I mixed it in my studio at home. It didn't take a lot of space. I could just mix a small solution and paint it on my paper. Acrylic gesso, I also tried that, which I bought from Michaels, and I could apply that to my paper. And I found that I could work easily at my drawing table and coat my page and then start working.
Now, back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened to the baby at this point?
Well, in a few years later, she was joined by another baby. As soon as they were able to walk around and hold things, we gave them a crayon and gave them some blank paper, and they started making marks and letting their hand just do all sorts of things. They're older now. They're grown women, but they appreciate art. And so they go to art museums on their own, and they are very encouraging of to their parents and supporting what we're doing. And they would prefer not to be a professional artist, but it's there. That creativity is there, and it comes
out. So messengers are showing a lot of things to you, aren't they?
Yes.
Is this the way you got into Silver Point?
Having seen that show at the Art Center, yes, that's what got me into it. And then so I just started doing my series of roses, but with silver. And then learning more and more about how to manipulate the tool and getting very comfortable with it, doing a lot of experimentation. I went back to that catalog from the Fine Line show and saw that artists were using gold. And I thought, how am I going to get some gold? So I found a jewelry supply place that I was able to buy a little bit of gold wire. Copper, I bought from the hardware store, and that was pretty inexpensive. So I made a tool out of that and just experimented with different metals. I saw where one artist, Susan Schwab, who had a show here in Little Rock this past spring, she experimented with smoke. And I wanted to try that. I thought, how do you get smoke on a drawing? I think, well, you have to have fire. So how am I going to put this fire near a drawing and not burn up my drawing? So I had a couple of casualties in test pieces, so I learned what to do, what not to do. I would try watercoloring on top of those Silver Point drawings to see what that would be about. And then I eventually joined the faculty at UALR in the art department. I taught art. And at my first sabbatical exhibition, I had a number of Silver Point drawings in that show. And Townsend Wolf came over and saw that exhibition. I was so happy that he came because had it not been for him bringing the Silver Point shows to the Art Center, I would not have found this mm-hmm. medium. And he saw the work, and he really thought I had done pretty well. And so he purchased two drawings from that show for the collection at the Art Center.
That was wonderful.
That was wonderful. Yeah. So I felt at that point, I was probably doing pretty well.
So now you are at a point where it's almost a pinnacle of climbing a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go one way or you could go another way. So you had to make your own way.
Yes. Yes,
I did. So what did you do?
I started branching out a little bit on the types of things I was drawing. It wasn't just roses anymore. I was fascinated by lots of things that I would see in my yard, in my neighbor's yard. I'm just looking at the form and the beauty of what's there.
Were you creating new tools as well to work in this way?
I branched out a little bit further in that I brought in aluminum, steel wool, copper wool. And then over the years, I started a relationship with Susan Schwab, and we corresponded back and forth. And we eventually get the internet so we can email each other. And she sent me an image of one of hers that used a black background for her metal point. And I looked at that and I thought, what in the world? What did you use? And she said, black gesso. Go get some black gesso. So I thought, okay, I'm going to experiment some more. And I bought a bottle of black gesso at the art store, coated a piece of paper, and just started making marks on this dark background. It was amazing because now when I was drawing with the metal, instead of creating a dark value, the metal looks light.
Well, that wonderful one with the roses.
Yes.
That you got in that exhibit.
Yes, the one that was in the Delta, where you can really see how that metal looks on that dark background. And the aluminum on the black just really looks so bright and brilliant. And the copper looks reddish on the black background. Now, when I draw with copper on white, it looks gray. All the metals look gray at first. And then over a period of maybe 6 months or a year, then you start to see how the metals may change. But on this black surface, you see the color of the metal. So the gold looks golden, the copper looks red, the silver looks silvery until it starts to tarnish, and then it takes on that warm tone. And so some of the newer pieces in this exhibition at Hearn Fine Art, I've tried to exploit the color and incorporated some color in the background and the more color in the flowers. So you can really see that. And I think that's kind of where some of that work is going with some of the ideas I'm getting now. Knowing what metals I might want to use ahead of time may dictate the color background that I may be working with. If I know I'm going to work on black and I want a certain effect, then I have to decide which metals I'm going to use. I always do my initial drawing in pencil or something that I can erase easily because the metal you cannot erase. But still, for the most part, it's pretty well thought out. The pencil sketch has all the decisions made as to the shape, the size, even how big it's going to be on the page. All of that is decided in pencil. I am just captivated with nature. And I just feel that I'm connecting with this energy of life, a spiritual energy that anyone could relate to. In a lot of ways, my flowers are symbolic. I'm trying to find that sense of calm, but trying to find that form that everyone could look at and find their own place where they are with themselves, they're quiet, they're meditating, they're taken away from that everyday noise. And that really excites me. Many of the roses that I've worked from, those are from actual roses that I have, and they're such that I'm able to set them right in front of me, maybe 2 feet, no more than 2 feet away, in a vase, or maybe a few of them together in a vase, and I can work directly from them. And both processes, they're very different ways of working. If I'm working from life with the object right there, I go through a sighting process where I try to measure and get that size related down onto my page. Or if I'm working from a photograph, then I can make a grid and blow that up and work that way. So I don't need a lot of space. Actually, my drawing table is maybe about 3 feet by, maybe it's 4 by 3, something like that. And I have an easel also. So if it gets pretty large, like the 22 by 30 size, I'll put that on my easel. And all I have to do is swivel my chair around to face that versus, say, sitting at the drawing table. And my studio is relatively small. I don't need a big warehouse or anything like that. Some artist studios are very large. I just have a corner space. And that quiet, intimate space, I think in a way that kind of reminds me of being back in the bedroom when I was a kid. It was my safe spot. It was my quiet spot. I can enjoy the sunlight. It's peaceful. I just feel like everything is right in the world when I'm there.
That was Marjorie Williams-Smith. The exhibit, The Messengers, a survey of work in Metal Point at Hearn Fine Art on Wright Avenue, is up through November 25th. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.